Good evening, everyone, and welcome to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. We have a wonderful show for you tonight, very exciting. Welcome to my wonderful co-host, Veronica Entwistle.
Good evening, I'm excited.
Yes. Tonight we have a wonderful guest, Jim Sparks, author of the book The Keepers. And I'll be introducing Jim in just a moment. We're honored to have Jim as our special guest, and I want to just say a few things about Jim. Jim has conscious 95% recall of 20 years of abduction experiences. He is unique out there, folks. There is no one like him. He shares his experiences in his book, From Fear to Acceptance to Commitment and Responsibility for Changing the Outcome on Planet Earth. You're all going to be touched and moved by his sincerity and honesty in the face of the unknown. Everyone, I have great honor and respect for this man. His book, The Keepers, can be purchased at his website, and I want to give this, and I'll give it at the end of the show as well. We don't need www anymore. It's jim-sparks.com. And not only is this a phenomenal and exciting read, it is absolutely written to activate. The book is imbued, and I've only seen this with one other set of books, which is Dolores Cannon's. And this is my personal experience with it, I can tell you this for sure. Tonight you're going to hear part of his riveting story and the message that he's been given for humans to change the course of planet Earth and our acceptance as a member of the galactic community. I'd like to ask everybody, please, no call-ins tonight. We don't have a lot of time, and Jim has so much information to share. I'd also like to say here that the majority of our listening audience tonight is far beyond questioning if these experiences are real. We're now at a point of understanding and gathering information that will help us to substantiate them and the agendas behind them. As most of you know, I don't ascribe to perpetuating fear. That's just not part of my agenda nor the beings that I work with. I believe it's counter to becoming galactic citizens, and certainly John Mack had arrived at this conclusion before his death as well. And for those of you who don't know, I'm talking about Dr. John Mack, who wrote the book Abduction and also Passport to the Cosmos, and spent the last 10 years of his life working with the abduction phenomena. Someone asked John in my presence if he would be willing to be on a panel of scientists about the ET abduction phenomena, and his answer was an emphatic no. He stated, "I'm not interested in debating this with a bunch of scientists. The question of whether all this is real is no longer a question. It's time to understand it and deal with it from a more spiritual perspective." Dr. Mack, as many of you know, I consider to be a great friend and mentor, also wrote the foreword to Jim's book. And I'm going to quote here as part of his introduction. "The purpose of his schooling seems to be twofold: to create a hybrid race as an insurance policy for the future, and to awaken us to our mindless destructiveness so that we may halt the devastation that we're bringing to Earth." Sparks' articulate and moving expression of his awakening of consciousness in relation to this danger, a different point of view in sharp contrast to his earlier feelings, which appears to be the core significance of the abduction experience for him and so many others, gives his book power and importance. As Sparks has moved beyond his resentment, he has come to feel quite fortunate to have somehow been chosen to participate in such a great adventure. He is unwavering in his conviction that we must heed the being's warnings in order to stop the destruction of the environment and the death of the planet. I want to say here that Jim has been to the house, and we had a conversation again the other day, which I have come to learn that when Jim and I are together, it takes a while to integrate it for both of us. I found Jim to be sincere, truthful, committed to making a difference on this planet. And the wonderful thing about Jim is his acceptance of high strangeness all the time. And Jim, I love you for that because, you know, I live it. So it's rare that I get to find somebody who lives it as well. The other thing I want to say here is that Jim didn't want to talk about any of the questions I was going to be asking tonight. And to me, this is a sign. And I know people who really are in touch, and there's an innocence and a sincerity to them. They totally trust that the appropriate information will come through them in the now moment. An example of this would be Daryl Anka, who channels Bashar, and certainly Dolores Cannon, and these are two people that I really respect. Good evening, Jim.
Hey, great to be here. That's a wonderful introduction.
Hey.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I have great respect for you, and you know that, and certainly Veronica does as well.
Feelings mutual.
And we're excited to have you on the show tonight. And as I said, there's really no one out there like you, Jim. And that's what makes this even more exciting. I think your book is a must-read. I can't emphasize this enough to everyone. I would encourage everyone to buy it directly from Jim's site to help support his efforts right now and all the work that he's doing to help our planet. We're here to help each other. We're all in this together, folks. This is not a one-man show anymore.
Mm-hmm. I've ordered it.
Good girl. Jim, I want to start out tonight and ask you to kind of tell us about the beginning of all this, and I know that's a tough one. But you were so innocent and unaware, which makes your story all the more fascinating. And if you could just kind of synopsize the first 6 years, which is tough as heck to do, and also the anger that you felt and what drove you to stay conscious, to absolutely, and again, I honor your will because I, having spent time with you, I know that to be part of who you are.
Well, as you said, the easiest way to look at this and then to have a definition of fear, why it's fearful, why it's traumatic, and of course it's the unknown, is because we're dealing with non-human intelligent beings. Specifically, on my part, they're commonly referred to as gray. In that category, there were two sorts of beings in that particular gray species. One is what I call a worker being. Those are the ones with the big heads, the large heads, the big teardrop eyes that are no larger than 3 feet that we're all familiar with, and they all look alike. What I've realized over the years is the fact that those are created beings, and they're created to perform tasks. It's a high technology. They're part biological and they're part robotic. Primarily, in my experience and what I've seen in the last 20 years, and particularly, of course, the first six, as you mentioned, that's what most abductees deal with. Those are the ones that usually will escort you to a ship and so forth. And then on the other hand, there are the grays that I call, that I refer to as the true aliens, meaning that those are living beings, a phenomenal lifespan if they don't die at all. They've got the science and the technology to keep them in their present body form. And they're a bit taller. Their heads aren't as big as ours. I mean, they're larger than ours, but not as big as the smaller ones. They have larger eyes, but just a little bit larger than ours, and there's features on them where you can distinguish one from another. At first they look alike, but in time you start noticing that there's a few wrinkles on the face. It's a leather-like texture to the skin, and then you start seeing that there are individuals. In those first 6 years, what made it, and I break it down this way, the first 6-7 years were traumatic and terrible. The second set of 6 years were wonderful because I actually was literally indoctrinated into what we like to call an alien boot camp those first 6-7 years. No rhyme and reason. I'll touch on that a little. The second 6 to 7 years, I was able to participate in an ongoing agenda, which is a global agenda. And bearing in mind that if there were 360 agendas that ETs had in mind, I'm not claiming to know them all. I'm just privy to 2 to 3 and a lot of specific detail, and that was the purpose for me. And I got to see other things along the way that were pretty neat. But in that second set of years, 6 to 7 years, I got to participate in mass abductions and not be paralyzed and so forth. And then in the last 6-7 years, it's evolved to the point of I see what a purpose is, and it's a phenomenal purpose. But going back to your question, when they came to this individual, as far as I was concerned prior to 88, none of these things were possible. I thought UFOs existed because, gee whiz, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize there's billions of stars and God knows how many planets rotate around them, that something may come to this planet, but not mass abductions on the way it is today. But they chose, when they pulled me, from the first time they ever pulled me, it was traumatic. It was a technology that we're not used to go from point A to point B. In those first 6, I don't want to scare anybody out there, but it was scary at first. And like I said, it's evolved into something pretty cool. But in those first 6-7 years, I was paralyzed. My body, 95% to 98% of my body was always paralyzed. They used riddles and ambiguity. They did emotional experiments. They did physical experiments. They extracted semen. In those early years, I had no rhyme or reason, no frame of reference. I didn't understand why they were doing it, and I stayed fully conscious during all those experiences. They did not take the memory away from me like they do with the majority of abductees. So it would be almost like we're having this conversation now, the three of us here, and then someone asking us about it an hour later, and we recall it as it happened, and that's how it was. And so, but there's reasons why they're the way they are. These beings are extremely far removed from what we are, and then there's similarities. You're dealing with beings that have can think 10 to 100 times faster. They're 100% telepathic. Their technology is 100% thought-activated. They've mastered the ability to manipulate time. To them, manipulating time is something as simple as us using a remote control. In fact, to them, it's kind of boring. It's nothing really special. They have the technology to go from point A to point B anywhere in the cosmos, and with practically no time passing. We're talking about beings that have the technology and the capability and the understanding of the unseen. And what I mean by the unseen is that we get bits and pieces, and there are those of us that are either clairvoyant or psychic, or we have an ability to possibly see in other dimensions and other entities. These guys have the ability to go into any dimension, and once you're in there, it's as real as us being in the room you're in and the one I am now with air and everything else, only it would be invisible, occupying the same space in the same time. So they've mastered the ability to do that. They have the technology to be invisible. What makes them extremely difficult to be around, and again, it took several years, was one of the hardest things, and I think this is what creates a lot of fear, is they do radiate I'm talking about this particular species of gray. They do radiate an energy that is literally not of this world. And when they're within 50 or 100 feet from you, even though you can't see them, you sense it, and you feel very uncomfortable. As they get closer, let's say within 20 or 30 feet, and I always say don't hold me to the exact footage, your spine stiffens, you become paralyzed because of what's being radiated out of them, and then when they get within a few feet of you, all the chemicals in your brain, so to speak, emotions like adrenaline, the chemicals for fear, love, all of it dumps into your body at the same time, so it's it distorts your perception and how your physical being feels, your metabolic system, and in a lot of cases you may black out. That's why I think abductees miss a lot. However, the good news is that that's not something they do on purpose, and that's not something they do to hurt you. It's just a natural phenomena of what they are. But over time, human beings are pretty good. We're resilient. We adapt. Over time, you can overcome those miserable feelings. And then now, in these latter years, I don't even sense it at all. So I get, in fact, I see it as something positive because I know when they're basically when they're in the vicinity, and I can sense it, and I don't black out from it anymore. So. I was angry in those first 6-7 years. I focused myself in that time because I couldn't get an explanation as to why they were doing the things they were doing.
Which is why they were taking you regularly?
Exactly. They would answer in riddles, and one thing I know about their nature 100% is they absolutely do not like questions. They tell you things when they're ready, when they think you're ready to know it, and that's in their time. Now, what I've learned over the years as to why they're like that is because us humans are pretty typical, and you can't blame us. Let's say you're fully conscious and you're not afraid, and you get abducted. It's always the same thing. Who are you? Where are you from? Why are you here? Why are you this? Why, you know, we just have a million questions.
Jim, there are a couple of questions I have that I want to ask specifically. And I just, in terms of, I've taken a number of people who've been abducted aboard ship, and just, it's very interesting because when I do sessions like that, I've experienced tremendous discomfort in my brain, where actually my brain would become very toxic. And so what you just said completely explains that. Now, you indicated in the book, which I found to be fascinating, that there were also times when you were abducted that you saw military personnel around.
Yes, absolutely. And interestingly enough, that really flowered in the after the sixth year. Bearing in mind in those first 6 years, they kept me paralyzed for a couple reasons. One was I would probably, because I was bent on killing them. And also in the back of my mind, if I could tear anything up in the ship, if they set me free, I would do it. But it took those 6 years for me to come to understanding why they're the way they are. And of course, I don't do those things. That's something you're not supposed to do, and I don't. Again, in the interaction is radically changed. But back to the military thing, and I find it fascinating. Again, fully conscious and no memory taken away. I've lost count as to how many abductions I experienced with Greys and these paramilitary individuals, also military individuals who are of the United States, some of them being officers in uniform, never hiding their face, in cases even conversations back and forth. I've seen individuals...
Wait, Jim, before you go too far on that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a sensing that they were abductees because people who, many of John's patients, saw him aboard ship, although he had no conscious recall?
Well,
beings had conscious recall of what was going on, that they were actually conscious participants that were carrying their consciousness back into their human experience, did you perceive them to be actually abductees themselves?
One must always, I don't claim to embrace alien culture and have an open and trusting. What I do have a trusting, and it is open to a certain degree, but I always keep grounded with a healthy suspicion of what I see and what is said and what is heard. And when actually people talk to you versus the telepathic thing. So, again, we must bear in mind that we've got creatures that can do things like this, for example. Some of these crashes from the 40s and the 50s, where, let's say, the human society is heading in the direction of a technology that could be very dangerous if it's in our hands. So just to show you how their minds work and how people can be fooled, they can drop a ship on the ground, Lee, all of us here, even the best minds on this globe, that we either shot it down or there was an accident and it came down complete with beams. And we reach in there and we find all this wondrous technology that we're going to back engineer. I think you are familiar with the book by Colonel Corso, where he writes.
Right.
He says that when that thing crashed in the 40s, they found these clear glass tubes. It's fiber optics. They found these wafers, which turned out to be solid-state circuitry. They found chips, and I can go on and on. Now, if one looks at them as cunning as they are, we may have been heading in a direction where we could have devised a technology that could have spanned the universe. But we're not ready to join the galactic neighborhood. So why not throw things down there that are maybe anywhere from 10 to 50 years ahead of our time, so we keep working on that type of technology, which in a sense keeps us earthbound. So granted, we may get advanced to the point, if left alone, where we may travel the solar system, but at the same time, it pretty much keeps us here, even though it advanced us. Now, with that being said, I always leave room for the possibility of, let's remember what we're dealing with here, Jim. There are thousands of years ahead, technically. These are beings that accumulate so much data over tens and thousands of hundreds of years. They're very bright. They're very smart. They understand human nature better than we understand ourselves. It's always possible they can do something like that. But however, meaning that you've got some of the best men and women in the world in these abduction scenarios looking like they're in control of the situation with them, which they very well could be abductees, as you mentioned. Is that possible? I see that as a possibility, and maybe it has happened, but in my interaction, I would say not. What I've seen is, as a matter of fact, a couple of different circumstances. One in particular, I was in an above-ground hangar. I call it an above-ground base. And it was a hangar, and it was in the Nevada desert. And they were experimenting with, when I say they, I mean there were grays and there were our people, and there was one military individual who I'll never forget. He wasn't of officer ranking. He was very kind. He was very nice. He was almost like father-like. But nonetheless, and which I'm not saying that happened all the time, but in this case, I was out of control because they were working on something that appeared to be a way to transport people, literally, electronically. I don't want to sound too Star Trek-y here. And I sensed danger. This was my early years of freedom, so to speak. I sensed danger to one of the people that were in a container. It was a woman, and so I jumped up off this gurney to run over there to pull her out of this thing. And the point I'm going to make here is this military individual, I heard the E.T., he startled back like as if he was going to do something, the gray, but this military officer type said, no, I'll handle this. So you got the impression right away the man was in control. So, in other words, even though it was both of them together, you got the distinct impression. He warded off the what appeared to be something like military police who were running up there to stop me from going up there. And he also let the gray know, verbally, by the way. There wasn't a telepathic between him and the gray. It's always the gray to us and back and forth. But in this case, I did something unpredictable, and he said, no, I'll handle this, and he did, and he didn't do it in a bad way. He kept me from interfering with the thing. I've seen mass abductions.
Before we get in, we know this, I want to kind of stay because there's so much information here.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Now, you were interacting primarily with the grays.
Correct.
Okay. And then you started encountering the reptilians, is that correct?
That's correct. That's midstream. So somewhere between the 6th and the 10th year that they started coming into the picture.
I want to interrupt right here and ask if I heard correctly that the human was able to stop something that felt wrong.
I apologize. You're a little bit blurry, dear. So could you repeat the question?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault. It's just the connection right now. Go ahead.
I just felt like I didn't quite understand. Were you saying that the human? You talked about a woman who was going to travel, and you felt very badly about that.
I sensed danger.
Okay, but you were able, or the human, the military fellow, was able to be the upper hand there, and they don't he didn't just victimize these people.
I don't think the people were being victimized, because I'll put it to you this way. At that time, I found myself, normally when you're pulled from point A to point B, and because there's not a lot of time, but a brief thing on that, it's a pretty gut-wrenching experience. And other than being escorted, but again, we human beings can condition themselves to these things, like a pilot, a fighter pilot might to G-forces, but I'm not talking about the same thing, it's things you just get used to. Mm-hmm. However, what they were working on, I just got a sense, and to this day, I don't know really what it was, but I had a sense about me that she was in danger, so the apparatus that they had her in, that I had apparently just came from, because what had happened in that case was I was, this is a human-alien thing, this isn't a purely ET thing. The ET thing, their technology, they got it down, like I said at the beginning of the show. What I was sensing over here was that it was some sort of a technology exchange, and they were working on some sort of a transport device to take people from point A to point B, because they were ending up in this cylinder. The cylinder had metal on the top, metal on the bottom. It was on a platform, but there was no glass or nothing holding the thing up. So whether it was magnetic energy or God knows what kind of energy, and that person was in there, and I was on the gurney just prior to that, and when I regained consciousness, I got a sense that I just came, however they transported me on some experiment, I just got here, and then I just felt fear or concern for that girl. So when I ran up to pull her out of there, by the way, in this particular facility, there were military guards approximately 10 to 15 feet up against the back of the hangar, and they had sidearms, and they had the whole perimeter of it secured. I could hear fighter jets flying on the outside. Right. It was just very peculiar.
Jim, I don't want to spend too much time on this because we have so much to discuss tonight. But
bottom line, that it looked as though that the human personnel were in command of that situation.
Great.
There was no question on that situation.
Thank you.
All right, Jim, let's get back to the reptilians, because so many people have fear around reptilians, and I just to clarify your last explanation, it was humans trying to adapt ET technology, and the fear that you felt was the fact that the humans had not perfected it and that she may be in danger because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep, that's pretty close to it. And, you know, there's other things that enter your mind, but that played a big part of it at that time.
Okay, so let's talk now about the reptilians. I know that you had one extraordinary experience that was life-changing with the reptilians, but overall, and I asked you this question when you were at the house, which was, what was your sensing of the reptilians per se? And I loved your answer. If you could share that, I think it's
sure.
Really powerful.
Sure. It's everything other than the bad rap or reputation that I get from other people. And I can theorize pretty close to why I think that is. But going back to them, for starters, it was right around the end of the sixth, somewhere in the seventh year, when I had my first experience with them. Now, I've had experiences with three different species of reptilians. Now, I never called them reptilians. I just describe these things to people, and because they have scales, some of them look lizard-like, and then, of course, people have said, well, those are reptilians. Well, it fits the bill by the way they look. They are telepathic also. The first set were extremely intimidating to look at. What they did to make it easy for me, the very first time I laid eyes on those guys, there was between 9 and 12 of them, as they hologrammed a human face over one of the faces of this being, so that when I communicated, they were telepathic also, I was looking at what was akin to a person's face. Clearly it was a hologram, and clearly it was something made of light, because you could see through it partially and see the real face behind it, which was scary. But also there was a funny note to it, and I don't know if I mentioned that to you in your home. I think I did. As the mouth was moving to talk to me on the hologram, the telepathic words were out of sync.
Right.
about a half a second or a quarter of a second behind or ahead of it. So it was almost like looking at those old 40s movies when they didn't
right.
have that perfected.
They're old technology.
However, here's the main thing, and it's the first word I'm going to say. They were huge. No, that wasn't the first word, but they were huge. They were 8-9 feet tall. They looked like humongous linebackers. Their heads, and then again, you would be scared, but their heads were, their brains would protrude over their brow in lumpy form, and then it had these scales over it, so the, and the eyes are lizard-like, so they're scary looking, but the word of the day and the word of the century, maybe the word of forever for them was, the first thing I noticed about them was they were kind. They were nice. They did not talk, or communicate, I should say, telepathically real fast. They took the time to go over my personal life. I could ask questions. I could get answers. They went on to describe that they followed protocol, that initially, do we have time for me to go into this aspect of it?
Yeah, I think this part's important, yes.
Okay. They took the time to explain that, and this isn't the only experience I've had with these guys. So over the years, it's a very small percentage relative to the grays, but over the years, some of the interaction I've had with these things has been spellbounding, phenomenal, positive. But they went on to explain, and they use it. They, sometimes their science is so simple it seems stupid, and sometimes their explanation is so simple. And you walk away saying, boy, that was that one thing was stupid. And then later on, a month can go by or a year can go by, and you realize, you go, you know what? That wasn't stupid. That was right on.
Mm-hmm.
We complicate things as human beings. It's our nature in some sense. But, however, they went on to explain that they followed proper protocol. They came to heads of state. They came to policymakers. They came to leaders, world leaders, global leaders in the beginning, and said that this nuclear situation has to stop, said that your environmental situation, and they saw the environmental problems years before things really started cropping up.
Right.
And they actually gave technology for free energy, non-polluting energy, and a lot of amazing things, and made agreements. And these leaders with them made agreements for a particular timetable as to how we would implement this stuff. And what they said we turned around and did. Now, I'm not talking about us average Earth citizens, okay?
No, the government.
Right. Mm-hmm. What they turned around and did, or we, in case of the human species, leaders, was made weapons and made money. People, they went on to say people have been maimed, people have been hurt, people have been murdered, people have been this and this and that. And we all know that over the years, discredited and so forth, whoever gets close to the truth. And they their hands played no part of that. And then they went on to say, and this is my first meeting with these guys, that they were contacting and working with the average person on the planet.
Now, wait a minute, Jim. This is since that agreement with the governments has expired, because they do follow protocol, that they now are reaching out to the common man. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And now, why it expired, now here's where it gets a little sensitive, okay? It a lot of it may be from a time, and possibly, but I kind of think it's more like, look, we know what's going on here. We see what you're doing environmentally. We look at things from high in space. We look at things from other dimensions, and we see things, I'm referring to them, and we see things with high technology. You guys are going on a cataclysmic course, and the way they and a lot of people turn around and say, well, gee, how come they don't just come out and reveal themselves and yaddy-daddy-daddy? Two reasons that I've learned, and there may be more. One is they want to see us do it so we can evolve with, so to speak, unseen aid. And then the other specific reason for it is because they worked directly with the leaders and followed proper protocol. But more importantly, and I lost my thought for a second, more importantly is, What's hard for me to understand, and I've accepted, but now there's something I can respect and appreciate. When you talk about reptilians, when you talk about grays and other species, and over the years, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of years, and with time control, we're talking millions, basically they've been invisible and had wanted to stay that way without intervention and do whatever it is they do and all their other agendas. So they really, their hand is being forced, so to speak, and the fact that they're visible. So on one side, it's kind of wonderful, and on the other side, it's, gee, if they're showing themselves, then they really see problems here, and they know that we need to take care of them.
Well, can I interject here?
Sure.
In my own work, what I have seen is that it's called various things, Federation of Worlds, and so on, whatever names you want to give it,
mm-hmm.
that there are certain things that can happen and certain things that can't, that will interfere with our evolution as a species. What I perceive, and certainly in our conversations and what I've believed for all along and been told directly, is that as a species, if they intercede too much, we will give away our power. We will not evolve the way that we had planned as a collective and completely screw everything up. Now,
well, good point. Go ahead.
Okay.
I apologize. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Okay. Anyway, so I see it screwing up our planet. But what I saw, you know, from, and certainly in reading your book and in talking with you, Jim, and is that, and I'd like you to talk about this one, if you would, please.
Sure.
The experience that you had where they brought you in to participate in an abduction of, I believe you used the figure of somewhere around 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Can you segue into that one?
Yeah, sure. That was a turning event also. It played a major role in going from, again, those first 6-7 years of trauma, so to speak, to seeing something, right. And that experience was different in a lot of ways. I found myself, after being pulled in a clearing in the woods, the size of a football field, I'll get the kind of like technical stuff out of the way first and get to the meat of it. But so you can see, in one sense, it was extremely disorienting, and in the other sense, it was it elevated me. Because I wasn't on board a craft, I wasn't paralyzed, I wasn't going through all the weird experiments. I was standing out in the clearing of the woods, approximately the size of a football field, where they cleared the trees. Below me were a dozen to 15 people sprawled on the ground, nude or in their night clothes, so obviously they were pulled while they were sleeping. And there were three groups of people in that particular point. To my left, about 10, 15 feet, there was 12 to 15, and to my left of that, there was another 12 to 15. The first telepathic message to me from the grays that were there were to calm the people. Even though they were primarily paralyzed, they were still, some of them were in shock and scared. And so I gave you a lot of details, and I'm going to bounce around to get to it, but summarize, so to speak. And I did that, and I told myself, my God, after 6-7 years of this, no frame of reference and not what's going on, they're actually allowing me freedom here. And I felt like it was a gigantic move, even though I did not know what was about to take place. I just comforted some of the people. Three crafts appeared. It was an overcast night from the horizon, from the left to right. They hovered over all three groups of people, and that was, again, for the first time that I had ever seen a craft from the outside after 6-7 years. I've seen many since, and it was phenomenal to me. It was absolutely gorgeous. In fact, a beam of light came out that was a bright, bright white light with a hue of blue, but what I could see were windows or portals, whatever you would want to call them technically, and I could see scurrying around back there, and I could see the silhouettes of E.T. and
okay,
human
Jim, on that, I don't want to cut you off, but I want to get to the final agenda, and I want you to, if you would, share what you saw aboard ship.
Okay.
Because this is very important for people to understand.
It really is. Once I got on board, once they pulled us on board, I blacked out at that point. When I came to, I led that group of people that was on the ground, was asked to lead them into this corridor. We were in a corridor, and it opened up into this huge room, which didn't make sense, and I guess it has a lot to do with dimension and shifting, but it was a hell of a lot bigger inside than it looked from the outside. Now we had something the size of approximately a basketball gymnasium. There were rows and 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 rows of monitors with these seats in front of them. In the back of this room, a giant room, there were ETs, grays, and there were human beings working together, scurrying around, doing activities, technical activities, from what I can tell. In this process, I was asked to seat the group that I had with me, and I got a little stubborn halfway through because I started looking around. I blacked out because they blacked me out. When I came to, I was sitting in front of my monitor. But now from the 35 to 50 people that I had initially from the ground, when I looked at this entire room, that's when I figured there was pretty close to 1,000 people in there,
right.
All of them sitting up.
And what were they showing people?
They created an atmosphere that heightened your emotions, but it was for a reason.
Right.
And there was a hum, and then all the that lasted about 3 seconds, and then all the monitors lit up at the same time showing the same thing. And the first scene was, every time I think about it, I just, the emotions in me get the same way. Not tearing emotions, but just, they showed us the ocean. And it was just a beautiful turquoise blue, just drop-dead gorgeous sea, teeming with fish, alive and healthy. And then the sky, the air was just clear, non-polluted. It was just such a beautiful earth scene. And you knew that it was from years before we populated the planet.
Right.
And then that scene disappeared, and it was another earth scene. And so the way our emotions were pumped up, you couldn't just help but go on. It took your breath away. You just went, oh, my God. It's so gorgeous. And the next scene was a lake scene with mountains and snow on top of the mountains, and there were beautiful, healthy trees. And it was one beautiful earth scene after the other with this three-second pause, and then it would light up. And it just took your breath away. Then, slowly, the scene started getting ugly, meaning that the first one that we saw, and if you can imagine all these people in these monitors with this stuff lit up, the sensations, just how phenomenal and huge this project is. We were sitting in front of the next scene that came up was not nice. It was the sea was gray and dingy. The fish were bloated and floating on the water.
Okay.
The sky was polluted. And then the telepathic words came. You're killing your planet. And
right.
Then that scene disappeared, and another scene that it was a beautiful scene was ugly. Your planet is dying. You're killing your planet. Your planet is dying. Then all you could do would be to weep, collapse in your seat, and then you couldn't feel any more empty about Mother Earth.
Okay. I want to move forward a little bit, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to get into... they obviously have prepared you to come forward.
Correct.
And there is no question. I mean, I understand this one from my own experiences, and we've certainly shared these together, that there is no question, and there are so many people listening tonight that can relate to the fact that somewhere deep within them is this tremendous sense of needing to do something, of having a commitment, having a something that they're supposed to do on the planet, something they're supposed to do to help shift Earth.
You bet.
And, you know, like I said, the majority of the people I would say listening tonight are abductees, whether they're consciously aware of it or not. That's why I wanted you to tell this story. I want to jump for a moment because
sure.
I think this is so powerful. That in an encounter that you referred to where you were with, I believe, I don't know, 9 or 12 of the reptilians, they talked to you about amnesty.
Mm-hmm.
Can you touch on that? Because we only have less than 20 minutes, and I think this is so important. This is so important, and it's part of you have been led to create a foundation.
Correct.
Okay. Now, part of this, a big piece of this, and I know this one to be absolutely right on, if you could talk about the amnesty that they talked to you about.
Sure. Again, that's what made that meeting so phenomenal, Jackie and Veronica, because of the fact that they came out with so many answers, and you know, and earth-shaking, and you know, galactic answers. In that case, in that same scenario, they said that they mentioned, and I know this to be so from experience, that there is a growing majority of individuals in black ops, sanctioned and non-sanctioned agencies that want to come forward with particular types of technologies that will literally change the face of the earth.
Black ops, for those of us who don't know?
Sure. Black ops would be, they call it black operations, they call it black budget, they call it agencies that operate outside the government but aren't but technically don't exist.
Oh, I see.
And those are the ones that...
He funded, Veronica, anywhere from $2 billion to the last figure I heard was in the trillions. Go ahead.
Well, what they've been doing is gotten so... The technology that, you know, it used to be that the military would be 20, 30 years ahead of us, technically wise, you know, to defend the country, and then they would give to the government or business and private sector certain technologies that we can all use, but they always wanted to make sure they were at least 20 years ahead for reasons of defense, common sense. However, they're hundreds and hundreds of years ahead now, in some cases thousands, because we as human beings literally possess a lot of these technologies now, but they're closely guarded, and that's why people have been hurt who's ever gotten close to it. And there's a reason for me telling you this, because this is what they said, and I'm just going into more detail, that they've had to defend this stuff, and they were clear. The reptilian said their hands played no part of this when it came to discrediting individuals, murder, and maiming, for security, national security. Okay, now here you've got people who are now realizing that the condition of the planet, where we are as a species, so we don't go into self-destruction through ET interaction. We got human beings that want to come forward with a lot of this stuff, not being forced to come forward. There's a difference between disclosure, which is forced, or amnesty, which is voluntarily. So the...
Conscience, Jim.
Pardon me, dear?
It's called conscience.
Conscience, thank you. That's very good. Couldn't put it any better. And, of course, here's what they're looking at. It's such a basic human principle. What will you do to me once you realize all the things we've done in the last 50, 60 years to keep this stuff secret, even though they're convinced that they're 100% we're doing their duty? A lot of law-abiding citizens have been hurt. Without me going into a lot of detail, we know that. So what these reptilians suggested strongly that we do, and I think it's going to happen, is we create an amnesty bill or an amnesty program, which is an avenue for which one can choose to take, that there will be no recourse either for what they've done in the past or any recourse from actually the groups or the black ops agencies that they're involved in.
So now, from the military, the government, from the populace, they come forward with full amnesty.
And they have to be 100% forgiven, not for spiritual reasons, but for practical reasons.
There you go.
Now, there's nothing wrong with the spiritual aspect either.
But we all... And, Jim, I sent you an article yesterday where this is already being talked about in Canada.
Uh-huh. And, okay, yes, I'm familiar with the gentleman. His name's Victor Vigilante. Oh, I can't say his last name right.
It's Webbery is the one that put it forward.
Yes.
And, but this, I feel, is probably one of the single most important pieces in terms of opening the door now, because everybody's pointing fingers. Lots of people are afoot right now in terms of disclosure. This is the first time that I have heard anything that made any sense to me whatsoever, which is to say, here you are, you can come forward if you choose. Here's full amnesty, and you will be protected.
100%.
Right.
And there's meat here. Here's where it gets a little deeper, and I'll throw this at you. Because I was confounded over the years. This, see, one of my assignments, and when you said a lot of people feel they need to do something, it's going to reach the point of critical mass, because they've been abducting, and I hate that word, but pulled, whatever you
detaining.
Would like.
Detaining is a better word.
Okay, detained by, I think, not just the hundreds of thousands, into the millions, and maybe even more.
Right.
But the physical memory is taken away. But you're enhanced with it. They just enhance your sensitivity to earth situations.
Right. So it's sitting in the subconscious, or what we call the shadow, from a psychological term. So the promptings are there.
They're there, and you'll know when it's time. And it's not brainwashing. It's not mind control, because it's not sinister. What I mean is, you'll know when it's time to act, when the right thing comes along for you to act in whatever your capacity is.
Right. Now,
and you'll do it if you choose to. You will not have to.
Now we need you, Jim, to talk about your foundation and what you're coming forward with, because, again, here's a perfect situation where, and I've said this to my clients over and over again, and this comes from them. Each one of us have a unique piece that we're here to bring forward.
Very good.
Okay, whether it's through art, through the written word, through healing, through whatever, political action, whatever it may be. So please tell us about your foundation, because
sure.
I think this is so powerful.
There's several things that we're working on, but to keep it simple, I formed a foundation out of my pocket and expenses back 9-10 years ago called Your Earth, Y-O-U-R Earth. Your Earth, but I let it lie dormant. I let it lie still until the timing was right.
There you go.
And we're fast approaching that time, which I don't need to tell you. Okay. and also, at the same token, I'm studying, and with help of others, we're organizing something. And how we're going to go about this, we're pretty clear what we need to do. Your Earth is going to, for starters, have more resources than it could ever need. It's not going to be something that lacks anything. So when Your Earth is on a project, it'll get done. Here's what the recommendation is as far as the environment is concerned, which now I find fascinating because now I'm tying this thing into the amnesty.
Now, this came from the ETs, is that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And so this will touch the deeper minds, and I'm not saying that we're all not, okay, but it'll touch something deep within you. On an analytical and an intelligent way. I couldn't tie in this plan for the environment and this amnesty. It didn't make sense, but now I see what it's doing. Okay, my thing on the mass abductions definitely is the rainforest. That's Jim Sparks' assignment. And it may be a lot of you that are listening, and it could be 10% of the audience, it could be 10% of the population, maybe 50. Okay, I don't have the statistics. However, here's what they said to do. And remember earlier I said, some of these things sound so simple, they're stupid.
Right.
They seem stupid, and actually I'm the stupid one, because later I say, man, I'm seeing something to believe. I mean, particularly this Ecuador president, which I don't know if there's time, but nonetheless, they're claiming buy all the equatorial land, purchase it with money, buy all the Amazon land, you purchase it. And the way Your Earth is to purchase this property is so there's never a question, and it has full control with far more funds than the wildest imagination ever expected to get for it. So it could never be questioned that, oh, well, you know, you did some sly business deal and you pulled it out from under us. We're here to protect this stuff. That's the first step. So that addresses greed. To give you an example, if you have a million parsecs of rainforest land and there's an owner who, at his wildest expectations, thinks he can get $20 billion. I'm just making figures up, okay?
Go ahead.
Thinks he can get $20 billion for it. Your Earth won't be a pushover, but Your Earth would probably buy it for 35 or 40. Your Earth will make sure that there's no question you have owner's rights. The second thing, after purchasing this property, you're addressing the greed issue, which is the worst thing to address. The second thing you do is you let inhabit it, the Indians indigenous to that territory. They get to inhabit it solely. The individuals who have been, this is the third part, the individuals who have been slashing and burning, primarily they do that for inadequate housing and to feed themselves. And I, like most of us know, and I know you do, they go on and burn more because they don't understand crop rotation and they're just eating away at the rainforest. So what they're saying is put those people to work as part of the restoration program. Now I'm just going to lead to amnesty in a second. This is where the avenues meet, join. Put those people, or it's going to start to, and you'll see the picture. Put those people to work restoring it and reward them with their labors by giving them a plot of land and also adequate housing and knowing how to farm it and rotate the crops properly, not in the rainforest but outside it. Now, in this third part, this is what involves the global community. I figured out something so silly. If you, there was, I think it was the Equatorian president, he has a million parsecs, and this is a true case, of sensitive rainforest land that they found good oil on it. And so in order to exploit it or explore it and get it out, what they would stand to make is $30 billion. What he has offered to do is sell it to the global community, and it's owned, and it's protected as long as they get their money. to see your Earth would do something like that. However, that is what blew my mind was he went on to say, and I would like to, he didn't do what the ET said exactly, but he was right in line. He goes, and I'd like to inhabit it with the indigenous Indians. And I just like fell over on my computer chair when I saw that. That's where I'm seeing things start to tie. Now you've got these individuals for poor people, the poor there, restoring the property. This involves the global community on a hands-on project. If you take that $30 billion and you involve the adult population of just the United States and a certain percentage of corporations and government aid to a certain respect, but we take the bulk, it would cost us around $5 to $10 a person to save that property. That's not a lot of money.
No.
And if you involve Canada, and you know, I'm not saying the United States is the answer. It's a global thing. And then you involve South and Central America, it comes down to 50 cents a person. If you involve the rest of the free world and throw in some corporations again and business and government, us all knowing that your Earth is pure, the organization, you're looking at 2 or 3 cents a person. And so, see, these things really can be done. Now, here's the beauty of it.
Hold on 1 second, Jim, and I just want to add this. One of my dear friends is one of the largest loggers in all of Africa. I had a discussion with them a couple of days ago. They were sick because they control a big portion of the rainforest in Ghana. And they had just planted hectares and hectares and hectares of trees. And the natives had gone in and torn them all, burned them down, torn them down, and in order to work the land.
That's right.
And so this is a global problem.
Correct.
And it just was interesting to me that this came out of the blue after you and I had this major discussion about this. So go on.
It's a hands-on project. The solutions are simple, but. Can be extremely challenging, but again, if you have more resources than you need, this is what I mean by more resources.
But wait a minute, wouldn't it be helpful for everybody to have a monitor, just like everybody was shocked into looking at those monitors? That'd be great to get some of those to these people who are, you know what I mean?
I do.
It is a solution.
Well, they may be a little resistant, however, Veronica.
I think it's
a startling wake up.
I think it's there, Veronica. I think, look, I've seen, because of lack of time, there's things I haven't even gone into with you, Jackie. I've seen, which I nary go public with, but maybe it's the time, or getting close to the time, so I kind of hint. These guys have the ability to go into future. Remember me telling you that?
Yeah, absolutely.
They brought back, for lack of a better description, holograms of individuals who control a lot of this land. Now, I saw these things 20 years ago, 18 years ago, 17 years ago, and they would always display the future out of order. The same reason why they would they take the physical memory of these mass abductions away so you don't get in your own way. Because if everybody remembered it to the T, they would just, how do you handle your life? So when the time is right, you're going to know what to do. When the structure is there, which I believe is your Earth is a big part of it.
Okay.
And when it's there, it's not only going to just have enough money or more than it needs. It plans on having. It's going to indoctrinate or include some of the best minds. See, no, I take that back. Will only settle for the best minds that this globe has to offer.
I want to ask a question.
Thinkers.
Bring in this.
We're moving up to the hour here. And Jim, what I want to do is ask if you would consider coming back on the show so that we could go into this in even more detail.
Please.
I would love to, and I'm sorry, Veronica, you didn't get your questions in. And also, I'd like to say that the next time we do the show, I'm going to give now's not the time for this specific email site, but it's close. So the next time we do the show, I'm going to give you a site where whoever you are but I'll go into more detail the next time, as abductees or people who are interested or people who love the planet or people who want to see us evolve, where I ask for you to write a paragraph and a half on as to how you feel you're being led in that direction. And I got overwhelming response to it. So the point I'm making, the reason I'm not putting it out now, because we're in the stage of setting this up, and I want to be better prepared to handle the volume when it comes in. So everybody gets answered. And bottom line, what we're doing there is we're just going to keep you posted. This is no commitment. This is nothing like that. Yeah, wherever you feel led. And that spark, I feel, will ignite in a critical mass situation globally. And you're going to know what to do. And you're going to be happy to do it. And you're going to see things work. But to end it real quick, here's where the avenues join.
All right, Jim, we've got 1 minute. And okay. I want to give your website so people can get the book.
Okay.
Let's get them reading. We're going to have you back on. Let's try to do this in 2 weeks, if that
would be fine.
And next week we'll talk more about this and then have you back on 2 weeks from tonight. Your website is jim-sparks.com. Please, everyone, get the book. It will trigger you. It will activate you. It is imbued. This is a way for all of us to participate. I've said this forever. A part of me is in every one of you, and a part of you is every one of you is in me. It can be no other way. This is what we're all about. We're in this together. Jim, you know I love you. I have great respect for you. Ronnie, you're the best. And I want to say good night to everyone. Thank you for listening. And be with us next week, of course, but also 2 weeks for sure. We'll have Jim back on and go into a lot more detail about all of his experiences and where we're going from here.
Thanks, Jim.
Hey, thank you for letting me on the show, and I thank you for the work is important, and it is in detail, and I know they'll enjoy the read, and it will really help to where we are now. It makes a lot of sense. It's written in a very common sense, practical.
Jim, I adore your commitment. I appreciate your courage so much. And good night, everyone. We love you all, and talk to you next week.
Oh, by the way, the Psychic Eye. I'm doing a book signing on the 29th. We forgot to say that.
Psychic Eye, Jim.
On Rainbow in Charleston. I'll be there in the store.
The 29th at what time?
Between 1 and 4 p.m. I believe it's a Saturday on the 29th. And I'll be there for 3 hours, and you can meet with me. And if you get a book through the site at the jim-sparks.com, I'll be happy to sign it for you. And I can see some of your faces if you'd like to come out there.
Beautiful. That's in Las Vegas, everyone, in case you don't know. That's Rainbow in Charleston. That's on the west side of town. Anybody has a question, you can email me. Love to all of you. Good night, everyone.
A wise old owl sat in an oak.